The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello and welcome to MotoGP OD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is Friday, May 22nd, 2009. This is episode number 178, and I am Bob Hayes, your host, here again this week, bringing the best in motorcycle road racing coverage. So, got a really, really big show today because we did another call with Jules about the racing weekend that we had going on. We had World Superbikes at Kyalami and MotoGP at Le Mans. So a lot of racing going on that week, a lot of stuff to talk about, including some not very super good news about Regis Laconi that we're going to get into here in the call a little bit, and give you a little update there in the outro as well. And other than that, not a whole lot of sort of front matter administrative stuff to go on and on about this weekend. So why don't we just go ahead and jump right on into the show since the call's a little over an hour long. So here we go. Bob and Jules talking about MotoGP and World Superbikes. All right, got Jules on the phone. How are you doing tonight, Jules?
Pretty good. I took an extra long nap with my kids, so that was interesting.
I love naps. Naps are excellent. I think everyone should have a nap every day.
I'm not a good napper. My naps are usually like, oh, I'm just going to take a 30-minute nap, and 2 hours later, I'm like, oh, you should have just missed, this much.
Wiping the sleep. Whatever. Yes. In any event, so we had a big weekend of racing last weekend, and I was impressed with Speed's schedule. They're all of a sudden, the last couple of World Superbike races, they've been showing race 1 and 2 on Sunday. And so last Sunday, they had the 250s, the MotoGP, and 2 World Superbike races. So 4 hours of motorcycle racing on Speed TV on Sunday. I thought that was kind of cool. Thank you, Speed.
Yes.
Because I had a Navy weekend, so I was gone, could not watch them live and all of that business. But I came back and started racing, watching races on Sunday night, and actually just watched the 250s here tonight. So yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. So MotoGP in France. Le Mans. We had predictions, which we did say there was a huge disclaimer when we made these predictions that if it's raining and stuff, that this pretty much all goes out the window. And I think the window is pretty much a good place to put some of these predictions.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But it was an interesting race. I wouldn't say it was like a great race, where I was on the edge of my seat and stuff, but I was totally fascinated.
There was a lot of fascinating things that happened, absolutely. But as far as like racing, it was one of the worst.
Right. It was more like a Formula One race. It was a lot like a Formula One race with pit strategy. Whether it was strategy or just sheer luck or whatever it was still
pit
luck.
Definitely pit luck.
Yeah. It was different. Very, very different. I think we actually had a couple of. Well, out and out firsts in MotoGP on that race. First ever, actually. And some kind of interesting stuff. Because qualifying was a mix of wet and dry. Actually, qualifying itself was dry.
But yes.
But there was some, during the practice session, everything was a bit wet and everything else. And even qualifying surprised me a bit. Pedrosa on pole, Lorenzo second, Stoner third, Rossi fourth. It was a little odd.
Yeah. Actually, Pedrosa on pole was a little bit of a surprise until I realized, he was really good at the circuit last year. He just hit that fade. But he actually, looked solid second, even with Rossi on fire the way he was last year. Until maybe the last 6 or 7 laps, and then he got passed by Lorenzo and Edwards last year. Yeah, so I think Stoner was fairly happy with his qualifying. I think Lorenzo is kind of where he was last year, minus the crashes. So watch out.
Right, and Lorenzo also, like we've been saying, actually he might have advanced beyond spoiler and with this race now where we're at with only 4 races, 25% of the season ish. into contender.
Well, let's say, so we're four races in, we got 50% Lorento, so that's...
exactly. But yeah, the race itself was, it started off, it was wet. Everybody, were they running full wets or intermediates?
I thought
it was mostly full wets. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But actually the track was already drying at that point.
Yeah. And then they think, you know, a few laps into it, we were already, the people were already getting the bikes ready to go to start switching.
Exactly, because, you know, MotoGP, the flag-to-flag rule, a little bit confusing and all of that, but basically the riders can come in, switch bikes, as long as the other bike has a different kind of tire.
Right.
So if they start out on wets, they can go to intermediates or they can go to slicks. And typically it's been one extreme to the other, you know, wets to slicks or slicks to wets. They haven't screwed around a lot that I've seen in these flag-to-flag races with the intermediates. But yeah, there was quite a bit of talk of, like, you know, when are the riders going to start coming in? Who's going to start coming in first? And whole shot and all of that. Who got the whole shot on that? Was that Lorento that got right off the back, got the whole shot, or
pretty much? Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Because he led the first lap, and I'm trying to think back, and yeah, the first corner, you know, yeah, everybody gets through. But yeah, so after a few laps, we're talking about who's going to come in first. And if I recall correctly, I think Rossi was the first, was he not?
Yes. So what happened was that it really looked like Rossi was holding up the rest of the field behind him, Pedrosa specifically. And he knew that he was holding them up. And he knew that he wasn't catching up to Lorenzo. So I think he decided, okay, you know, I don't have a good setup for wet. I got to get to the dry setup as quickly as possible because it is going to get dry. And he came in, and Pedrosa came in immediately after him.
On the same lap,
like literally right behind him.
Right behind him, right, exactly.
And they went and switched to their dry setups, and they came out, same order. And then on the next lap...
Everything went to hell.
Yeah, Rossi paid the price, the ultimate price. He was ahead of Pedrosa, and so he was the one testing the waters, as they say, you know, literally in this case. There was a big puddle, and he lost control and crashed.
Right, relatively minor, sort of, you know, low-sidey kind of, you know...
Yeah, he just, you know, it's kind of like a...
Yeah.
Blanc.
Went down.
And, yep. And but you could even see on the video that there was something flying off the bike... Some black piece of, maybe it was a foot peg or something, flew off of it.
Something important.
Something, obviously something important. That was one of the most interesting things about the race, is how many times Rossi ended up going through the pits. Go ahead.
That was the interesting thing about the race. It was amazing. because, yeah, Rossi goes in, gets slicks, which actually I thought, just looking at the, watching it on TV and everything, I thought it was a little early. And especially since I've been watching Formula One lately, we had Ferrari, and I believe it was Kimi Räikkönen came in and did a tire swap, and everybody was going, oh my God, I can't believe he's doing this early. What a gamble, this and that. I flashed back to that. It was like Rossi is totally gambling that he can hold it out and that the track's going to dry up. And
that by the time that it dries up, he's gonna have the tires all warmed up and then he's going to be able to catch whoever's in front,
be in perfect position and this and that. And it just did not pay off. However, it did somewhat pay off to an extent for Pedrosa.
It did.
Because Pedrosa managed not to crash.
Exactly. I think Pedrosa was incredible at the end, and he ended up being on the podium.
Right.
He ended up, you know, pipping Dovizioso. And I think he really benefited from the fact that he was actually following Rossi both before and after the pits, so he got to see Rossi go down and went, oh, okay, well, I better take this corner a little
bit careful
slower
in that spot. Yeah. That's actually, I think that's probably true. The guy that I think the star of the race, though.
Oh my God! Well, let's finish with this Rossi going through the pits. So he went through the pits the first time to go to dry tires. Then he crashed. Then he went back into the pits because, hey, it's a wet race. You can go in and switch bikes as long as you change tires. So he went back to wets, got fixed whatever he needed to get fixed. Well, on the other bike, right?
Right.
Went back out again, and then with, I guess, the intention of, let's come back in and yet again and get the dry setup on the bike now fixed with whatever broke on the first one. Unfortunately, He also ended up driving too fast through the pit limiter was broken on one of those bikes, so he ended up getting a drive-through penalty, a ride-through penalty. So he was through that pit lane four times, and actually he got that on the second entrance, right? The ride-through penalty. So I was thinking, can he combine the drive-through and switching a bike? And it turns out that there's actually a rule that says you cannot do that. A drive-through penalty you have to do on your own. So that's why he had to go in that extra time.
Yeah, exactly. And I was a little shocked at all of the whole how many times Rossi went in. I was a lot more than a little shocked. I was amazed at you know, my God, he's going back in the pits.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, he was basically shooting for, like, I got to get a point or two, right? Because you think about it. So with Lorenzo won this race. We'll talk about that a little more, but and he's only one point ahead in the championship. So and Rossi finished 16th, right? And it was actually amazing that only one rider did not finish the race, which was Mika Kallio, because with the conditions the way they were, I was just waiting for like five or six guys to drop. You know,
exactly, because we had seen that already. Not in the previous 250 race and all that, which was much wetter.
God, the 125 race, there's 32 guys on the track. There were 32 crashes in that race. I mean, there were some guys who crashed like three times and kept getting up, you know. Alex de Bon, that was in the 250, sorry. But there were guys that kept getting up. And I mean, that was a twisted race, you know. And those guys were out on full wets the whole time. So I think Rossi made the decision of, you know, I don't care how many times I have to go through the pits, but I'm going to keep going in, and maybe somebody will fall and I'll get that point. Because if he would have gotten 14th place, he would still be leading the championship, because he's now, you know, only one point behind Lorenzo.
And I think that Rossi is does that kind of math that quickly on the fly.
Oh, totally. He's very that he aware knows. Of everything everything that's going on in the championship. Very aware.
Yeah, he knows what's going on, because otherwise he wouldn't have been out there. And it was still, you know, he'd come back in, and because he entered the pits a total of four times, right?
Yeah.
And it's just like, wow, I can't believe he's going back in the pits.
I know.
And
I think the most amazing thing was that he was actually leaving the pits. Like that, so many other riders would have been just like, screw this, I'm not going out there risking myself, you know, for a point. Whereas Rossi even knows very well that point is going to be really important psychologically at the end of the season. Who knows? I mean, look at 2006. It was, you know, 5 points. So,
yeah. Oh, every point counts. And I mean, yeah, I think that the top guys know that deep within. And that's why they go back out. I mean, you know, they do.
I think they all know it. I think some of them are just like, I'm never going to have a chance to win the championship, whereas Rossi knows he's going to be fighting for the championship to the end.
Yeah, exactly. That's in the top guys. I mean, had this been the shoe been on the other foot, and this was Lorenzo, you probably would have seen a similar amount of effort of going out, you know, back out and everything. Pedrosa, be honest with you, I'm not 100% sure. He might have, once it was crashed, he might have called it a day. You know, it depend. It's hard to say.
Yep.
Just because of their personalities. I'm not trying to say, you know, Petrosa's a big wimp or something like that, but it's just the way it is. But yeah, it was amazing. It was freaky. And like I said, that's the interesting part about the race for me was I can't believe he's going back in the pits. But then the other interesting part was how long Lorenzo stayed out on the wet.
Oh, my God.
Everybody else had gone in, and now this is the part where it's like, was it the opposite of Rossi?
I mean, you know, Rossi went first, and Lorenzo went in last,
right? And exactly, and it was like, was it luck? Was it strategy? Was it, you know, working the numbers? Whatever, but whatever it was, it sure as hell worked, because by the time Lorenzo finally went back into the pits, switch bikes, which is, it's actually kind of fun to watch the bike switch. And it seems like you can see, because they showed quite a few of them at Le Mans. This is probably the first flag to flag race that I've seen so many where they actually focused on the riders doing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they did.
They really did. And it's kind of an interesting way, you know, that it happens. Rossi, it's obviously, this guy's practiced this. It took no time.
Oh, yeah. Well, some of the other guys, he practiced it four times in that one race.
Yeah, he did. Exactly. But some of the other racers, I believe it was might have been Takahashi or something. I mean, it was like, wow, have you done this before?
Well, look
you
at know? Lorenzo. Lorenzo bumped into one of his mechanics. Did you see
yeah,
that?
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
yeah,
it was,
yeah,
it was like you had to bounce off one guy and
get out of the way,
I
mean, please.
I think
yeah,
there was
pardon
some
me.
Talking about that. I have a feeling that that mechanic got talked to, like, buddy.
Yeah, but in any
race,
event,
he's like probably out there smoking a cigarette.
But that was fun to see this sort of thing that MotoGP riders don't typically do, and so then you know hopefully they've practiced it at least once or twice, but it's not something they count on doing because the flag to flag races are pretty rare.
Wow.
But in any event, Lorenzo stays way out, way past when he should have. They're showing his tire, and his tire is on that little back cam.
Right,
view
right.
Of Lorenzo's
it's
tire.
Torn. It is trash.
It's just awful. Yeah. And he's
it's
staying
like
out, and he's still doing okay. Gets such a lead, he goes into the pits, switches bikes, goes back out of the pits, no ride through penalty, still in the lead. It's like, now that's the Formula One side strategy type, that's what they always are going on about with Formula One.
Right, of, where they can come out.
You've got to push, you got to push, and you build up enough of a lead that when you come back out of the pits, you're not screwed.
And he was, and he was losing time, big time, to the other riders once he came out, but only for about a lap and a half. And after that, he got warmed up, and, then he started setting faster and faster laps. In fact, I mean, he was amazing the whole time.
He ran a masterful race, and I mean the final gap, what was the 17 seconds of a win?
It went down to I think at one point like 6 or 7 seconds,
half of that exactly. It was way low, and he ran a masterful race, and whether luck, good planning, it's thinking on the ball, whatever it was, I think Lorenzo, hats off to him. And that's like I'm saying, that was even more amazing than Rossi's four pit entries and pit exits.
But I have to say that for me, the most amazing thing was the second place.
Yes, I agree as well. Because, again, talk about the Cinderella story.
Yeah.
And in so many ways, both for the factory. Which do you think
well,
there's some executives?
We should say who we're
should we
about.
Say who it is? Yes, let's say who it is. Okay, we're big spoiler. Marco Melandri on the Hayate / Kawasaki motorcycle finished second place. And actually, though, it's not like this was gifted to him. He was running a good race the entire time.
He also did a very smart thing when he changed tires and he really, I mean, he was racing on both legs. Fortune said him a little bit better. He may have been racing for the lead at one point.
I agree. Exactly. And it was the whole thing was it was masterful. It really was.
I have to say I almost scream with joy for him when he got to pass Stoner during the wet part of the race because I know that must have meant so much to him to be able to pass the guy that almost you could say shamed him last year.
Spanked him last year. Yeah, really. I agree. And
the whole situation that shamed him. It's like, he was saying, he basically got to say, dudes, it was a bike, okay? Here I am, all right? Here's proof for you, all right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's already proven it since the beginning of the season that he's still Marco Melandri. He can still kick serious ass on a supposedly, bike that's the development ended, halfway through
last year.
Through preseason. So
right. I mean Jacques did some testing at Phillip Island on the Kawasaki, but realistically I don't know how much actual development and all of that. By that time Kawasaki had already checked out.
Yeah, I think part of that test was kind of seeing like, is this Hayate project even worth it?
Exactly. And and we've already spent the money. It's like, if we don't go, then we're going to, we might as well go. That was a lot of that with the Kawasaki and the results that so far that Melandri has had. And I dread the midseason break because that's when we're all predicting that all of a sudden, the Kawasaki's lack of development this year is going to really become a factor.
Yeah. And, yeah. We are, but these great results, they're motivating, sponsors and the possibly the factory to do something.
Exactly. I agree. They have to be. And also, all the predictions that so far predictions this season are fairly much out the window anyway. So we don't want to say anything is a done deal. But in any event, it was the Cinderella story. I think that Melandre was surprised. I think the team was surprised. I was certainly surprised. And it was really, really cool to see, just to be able to see him out there on, like you say, the not only just that, okay, Melandre has redeemed himself, that, hey, I can race motorcycles, dude. You give me the right equipment and I'll go out there and I'll do good, right? We knew that. We really did know that. But even the Kawasaki, would Hopkins or West have gotten these results last year?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know.
That's what I was thinking.
The wet was not this good.
Yeah. And speaking of wet riders, we'll get to Vermeulen in a minute, but just for some comments and stuff, but some of the classic wet guys didn't necessarily come to the fore on this particular race.
Well, let's remember that Marco Melandre won the very first flag-to-flag race. He's good in the wet.
Okay.
Yeah, right. He likes a loose race, so...
In any event, it was good to see, and you could see that he was pretty thrilled with it.
His post-race interview was like, he was just exploding with joy. But did you notice who he thanked first?
Yeah, it's the whole, the team, basically.
No, he said specifically Carmelo Ezpeleta.
Oh, you're right. He did.
Yeah.
I noted that during his thing. Yeah, I want to thank Carmelo to put this together. And and I thought at the time, I thought, well, that's kind of odd.
It is.
But we knew that too, though, that this whole thing was Dorna making sure there's enough motorcycles on the grid. So that's not that big of a surprise.
No. But it's kind of funny.
It was still a surprise. Yeah. You're right. Yeah.
You don't say it's not that you don't say. I don't think that he was out of line for saying it, but it's the unsaid thing.
Yeah, exactly. There were so many interesting things about the race, and then Pedrosa came in.
Pedrosa came in third, and he also was. I thought deserves a big round of applause because he got that third on the last lap. Like, you know, he saw that the times to Dovi dropping. And was able to pick up the pace. Dovi looked really uncomfortable. He looked solid for a third, but towards the end of the race, he was definitely looking. I mean, when Pedrosa approached him, and you could see the way Pedrosa was taking lines and the way the Vizioso was taking his lines, it was like, okay, the only thing he can possibly do is make himself wide, the Vizioso, because he's going to get so passed. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and actually, that gap was quite a bit more. I mean, Vizioso made up a lot of time
to Melandre.
Excuse me. Pedrosa made up a lot of time too to Vizioso, because Vizioso was in third, and Pedrosa picked up a lot of time in the last few laps of that race.
He was circulating at least a second faster than the Dovi was.
Yeah, yeah. He was just the last few laps. It was fairly insane.
Yep. Yep,
I'm checking through the lap chart right now.
The only guy faster than him on the track really was just Lorenzo. So,
yeah, and it was good stuff. Last couple of laps, your battle for third. Lorenzo had already checked out by then. So as far as winning was concerned, unless Lorenzo, dropped the bike, that was a done deal. But there was still good stuff going on for those last few laps. And thinking, what's Rossi going to do? Is he going to pull out the Rossi and suddenly pick up 2 points or something crazy? Mm-hmm. But he was so far down by that point that it was like basically somebody would have had to crash.
Yeah. Which is actually amazing that we didn't have other crashes. And the Calio thing was actually interesting too, because that was him and Hayden came together.
Yeah.
And there was some words between the two of them afterwards.
Yeah.
Because both were kind of blaming the other.
It's interesting from a Ducati side of things a little bit.
Yeah.
Of exactly what's going on. I mean, Hayden's not having, right out of the gate, the most wonderful experience with Ducati. He did qualify relatively decent compared to his previous efforts this year. What was he qualified at? 13th. Mm-hmm. Which is about, I don't know off the top of my head what he qualified in Japan or Qatar.
I think it was always around there,
Yeah, a little lower, 15th, yeah. That kind of thing. So, I mean, he's something. And I do think that Hayden's new crew chief situation that he's got going on will be of benefit overall. But like we said earlier in our pre-show, that it wasn't going to happen this race. It may have, going on a limb here a little bit, but it may be that already some stuff is starting to click together, because all of a sudden he managed to out-qualify You know, Nick Calio and, well, Nicola Canepa. So at least he was not like the worst of the Ducatis or anything like that.
Right.
If that sounds fair.
And we don't know what would happen with Gibernau, because Gibernau, of course, you know, he, we should mention that the fact that he wasn't actually racing.
Exactly. Did not even start.
Qualify.
Right. A broken shoulder, collarbone.
Same collarbone issue as always with his crashes. I'm actually, you know, there's a lot of stories about, you know, oh, he's going to be back for the Catalunya round, possibly even Mugello in 2 weeks. But, you know, he may come back for one or two races, but I have a feeling that what they're doing now is they're scrambling to find a replacement, because there's that rule where they have to, if they're, they don't have a rider ready by the end of Friday, if the rider's not ready by the end of Friday, that they have to go find a substitute. So, but yeah. I have a feeling that, you know, that he may be looking at this and is going, you know what? I think I'm done.
You, for the season done, you think?
Just racing motorcycles and crashing and hurting himself. I mean, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean,
how many times is he going to have to break this thing and get plates moved, taken in and out, and, you know, screws and, you know. I hope that he comes back. I hope it's not it actually sounds like it wasn't as bad as they originally thought, that it was, the operation was fairly quick and the procedure was very standard, so.
Well, it's just because they're getting so used to doing it on Gibernau. I mean, yeah,
exactly.
They have, like, you know.
Come on, here's your, like, you know, exact setup on the
exactly,
bed.
Exactly, exactly. A piece of duct tape that sort of holds this flap of skin in place, you know, and they peel it off. I had heard, I mean, and this was a couple of days ago, that he was definitely out for Italy.
Yeah, no, I mean,
but
the official story is he's out for Italy, but you never know. I mean, the latest news was that, he, I mean, with him all smiling and giving thumbs up, is that it went a lot better than anyone expected.
Right.
But
now, on the other hand, though,
much more important for him to be back at.
Exactly. Exactly what I was going to say. Catalunya is the race that he's going to want to come back for.
Yeah.
It's going to be there, Catalan and all of that. So while it was not necessarily the most exciting race that we've ever seen, it was certainly very, very interesting for the true fan, I think, is the way to put Le Mans 2009.
Yeah, yeah, you know, but I am going to, I think, I hope this doesn't become like a weekly thing where I bitch about stuff, like I was bitching about Monza last time. Well, I'm really going to bitch about this flag-to-flag rule. I think it is awful. I think it's the stupidest thing they could have possibly thought. If they wanted to make good racing, the flag-to-flag rule was exactly the way not to do it. So we basically ended up watching single riders just riding around and hearing from the commentators the times and looking at the times maybe, you know, on the screen and stuff like that. There was no racing. Pedrosa and Dovizioso coming together was not a big, like, fight or anything like that. Basically, Pedrosa waited until there was a place to pass Dovi and went by and kept going.
Right.
You know, it's like passing somebody on the highway. You go into the left lane and you pass them, and then you're back alone. The only real fight was between Edwards, Caparossi, and Tozen. And, you know, like Tozen getting, I think we should mention the fact that when Edwards actually passed Toseland, it was with anger.
Oh, yeah, he got owned. Toseland got owned. Yeah, and that was brutal.
And, like,
yeah.
Edwards, like, slammed him. I mean, he went right in front of him immediately after passing him. So there's definitely, you know, it was a very visible moment. I think there's probably going to be some talking to him about that. Probably over a beer and a laugh, but you know.
But, yeah, there's an underlying tone. If there's not an outright, flat-out tone, there's certainly an underlying tone. I agree. That pass was aggressive. Is one way to put it.
So this is kind of I'm going to make a little bit of a roundabout here. I hope you don't mind. I want to do a plug for the classic stuff, and this actually all comes back to this whole flag-to-flag thing. So on MotoGP.com, you now have this, I think they introduced this about a week ago, this classic races for an extra, what was it, 20, 25 euros?
25 euros or somewhere in that range, 24.95, something like that, yeah, euros, yeah.
So you get all the races, I mean, a full 17 races going back to 1992. What they did is they picked what they consider the best or most important race of the season from each year from 1992 until the present, and they have the full races available to watch on the website, the remastered, they look really great. They really, really look great. The only negative part of it is that, well, there's two negative things about it. One is that they chose the races. You didn't, and they didn't, I didn't always agree with their choices looking through. I haven't watched them all. I just watched a couple so far. And the other problem is that the commentary is done by Gavin Emmett and what's the Pitts guy's name? The guy who does is in the Pitts?
John Guy. But yeah, the new pit guy.
Yeah, the new pit guy. We should find that out. So they do it, but they do it as if it was live. And it's
well, they're
really
trying
concocted.
To do like Formula One decade, like they a few years ago with in Formula One on Speed, where they did the old races. Yeah, so they know the outcome, but they're sort of announcing it as along.
Yeah, and they'll say things like, well, you know, Rainey was in this shape last year at this while he was at this track, and it just has this air of disingenuity, I guess.
Yeah, I can see that.
That's kind of a bummer, and it's just really hard to swallow, and kind of the suspension of disbelief is just too much.
I'm gonna have to watch these. I'll have to sign up for that and check it out because I haven't seen any of them yet. Because I actually enjoyed Formula One Decade on Speed, where they showed races from 10 years ago as though they were and they did new commentary. Mm-hmm. So I'm really actually super interested now. I might have to check this out.
I recommend it,
but I agree that it may not work.
It's a little hard to swallow, but after you get over that hump, it's great. Because one of my favorite races, which was Phillip Island in 2001, I've never seen the full race. I've only seen maybe 5 or 10 minutes worth of highlights from it on a DVD, which was a 2001 review,
right?
DVD, the official one, and to see it, the whole thing, oh, it was just. It was amazing. It was even better than I had ever expected that race to be. That alone is worth the price of it. And so what happened is that I'm gonna try to cut this long story short. But what happened is that my wife and I have been watching these old races, but we ran out of races that she was interested in seeing because she's a big Valentino Rossi fan. So she's like, hey, you got any other ones with Rossi? I'm like. Well, you've already seen some of these. Oh, but you haven't seen a 2004 Mugello race where they actually on the classics they showed the Velcom race, which was obviously a very pivotal race, but
huge
and a fantastic race. But the Mugello race in 2004 was the one that I always like go back to, saying like this was the most insanely awesome race ever, and I have that one just on a CD that I made. So I popped that in, and it made me realize just how bad the flag-to-flag rule is, because that was a race that ended up being red-flagged, and then they had the sprint at the end. Do you remember this race?
Yes, I do. I do vaguely recall it. Exactly. I know what you're talking about.
And, even though it was a flag-to-flag, I mean, even though, like, that first incredible first race in the dry with I actually remember that season. I counted all the passes. We were on right on two. I remember we were posting, and there were, I counted 41 passes for the lead in the first race, the first part in the dry, and then the wet thing was another incredible six lap craziness. That was to me like the way rain races should be run is in that format, but aggregate time. Because I think it would be unfair to take away all that hard work that happened in the dry part. So I think we should go back to the aggregate thing because you know what? We got racing. We had racing.
I agree. I think aggregates have a lot of problems, but there's no good perfect way to do a race like that where you got to go in for a tire change and all that. But I do think that aggregate is probably the best way to do it. Unfortunately, it doesn't fit in the TV schedule all the time, and that's what the whole thing is about.
I know, and I think that's a real, real shame because what we got to see was like a qualifying that you got points for.
Yeah. I think that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
I mean, in terms of actually seeing, riders against riders.
Yeah. Especially for the last well, not quite third, but last 25% of the race or so, it was definitely like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's my bitch for the week.
Good deal. Good.
Hate flag to flag.
It's a soapbox. We can do that. It's allowed. So what's this do for the standings? Where's my sheet of world championship standings? It shakes things up a bit.
It does because Lorenzo takes over at the top. Even if they had been tied for points, him and Rossi, Lorenzo has now won two races.
Correct.
So Rossi would have had to finish 14th to actually be ahead of Lorenzo and actually be at 67 points. But it's 66 points to Lorenzo, 65 to to Rossi, and 65 to Stoner. Of course, Rossi has the...
Rossi has the advantage because he's had the 2 seconds.
Exactly.
Whereas Stoner has won one and then picked up a third, but right. He's not placed second.
Yep. So, yep. Yeah. And yeah, we should also mention that Stoner, you know, had a kind of a interesting race. He almost looked like it was like he was going to lose a lot of places at one point in Le Mans because it looked very ridiculously like deja vu similar to last year where he slowed down on the straight, but then he kind of figured things out and.
That was totally odd. Yeah, it was really odd. It was almost like something happened to the motorcycle. I mean, it was a drastic slowdown.
Yeah.
It wasn't, yeah. And they didn't kind of mention a whole lot about that after it happened.
They still haven't said anything about it. So.
No, very quiet. Because yeah. I think something did happen to the motorcycle.
Exactly.
But whatever it was, it went away. That one was kind of strange. Yeah, we didn't mention Stoner a whole lot in this race. I was a little surprised he managed to pick up third, to be honest with you. In some ways, because...
Well, no, he didn't. He was fifth.
Well, you know what I mean. Staying third in the championship. Sorry.
Oh, yeah.
I'm looking at the wrong sheet, and I'm like, look, Stoner third.
No, so, I mean,
he picked up fifth. I'm a little surprised that he stayed that high up the order.
Yeah. No, definitely, because he looked like he was going backwards, and then something. It's almost like he flipped the switch, and I was like, oh, okay, I need this switch. You know, whatever.
Exactly. And
like an adjustment in the traction control or something. You know, there's been a lot of talk about the fact that he actually rides with a lot less traction control than people have been saying that he does. So that's. I think there's some interesting stuff going on there. He was in the wet, so he may have been running full traction and then decided, you know what, screw this, I'm going to write my own thing. I don't know. We don't know. Nobody said anything. So, but between, you know, between Lorenzo and Pedrosa, we now only have, 9 points separating them, which is, you know, awesome. And for the championship, Stoner and Rossi are tied. Pedrosa just 8 points behind those guys, 9 points behind Lorenzo. So pretty damn cool.
Exactly. And I mean, granted, 4 races in this season, it's not the entire season completed, but it is significant progress towards the whole season. And like you said, with each race being a lap in the grand giant race, we got a good thing going on here.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. I'm really looking for... I mean, Mugello is going to be amazing because...
Yes, it has to be. I mean, we've had 3 different winners so far in 4 races. Things are shaking up. You've got... Guys, Melandri, where the hell did he come from?
I know he's in fifth. He's in fifth position.
Yeah,
in the championship.
I know he's in fifth in the championship. He's had some very, very good results. I mean, the second obviously was spectacular results, but even the last 2 races, you know, picking up 10 and 11 points, it's more than we'd kind of thought he would do.
Yeah.
So you know that's good stuff. And it just the whole, like I said, it's the best season ever, Jules. But whatever.
I want to see some good racing. Other than the lack of good, really good racing, it's a very good season.
Actually, I mean, there hasn't been some bad racing. I mean,
no,
Jerez was good.
You know. Where are we going to get the Laguna Seca race this year? That's my question.
Yeah, we're going to have that at Laguna.
Yeah.
But the racing as a whole this season, I think, has been satisfactory. How does that sound?
Sure. Satisfactory. Okay. We're getting used to, you know, like putting up with not a lot of passing, which is kind of a shame.
Yeah.
And you know what it is for me is that watching these old races on the classic stuff, and then that also making me go back and go go through my library and pulling out all the old races, and I'm just like, wow, we're so removed from those days when of the 990s or the 500s where the battles, every race, I mean, God, the 2003, 2004, those battles with Gibbernau to the very end.
Yeah.
I mean, every race, man, every race.
Right. There were a lot more races where I was, you know, I was literally jumping up and down in the seat. And I think you're right. You get a little jaded, a little used to it, a little whatever you want to call it. But on the other hand, you know, kind of what are you going to do? Do you want to abandon MotoGP? I mean, because we've got that going on right now in World Superbikes. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, which we want to talk about because World Superbikes has been some good racing. Kyalami, bit of a different weekend, but we're going to get to that in half a second.
Yeah.
You want to talk about the 250s at all? Frankly, this was by far the most boring 250 race of the season so far.
Pretty much. I think the only thing really worth noting was just how crazy the Thomas Luthi, Alex de Bon crash was.
Oh, God. That one was bizarre. And yeah, could they have shown that a few more times on the replay as well? But no, it was a weird one. Alex de Bon goes down. His bike slides around, manages to catch Thomas Luthi's rear wheel out.
Well, it was the Bon's head that took out Luthi's bike.
I don't know. No. It was the bike.
Oh, was it?
I just had this argument with my sister. We watched it several times.
Who won?
The bike hit de Bon's bike hits Luthi's bike first, and then Alex de Bon's head.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, it was definitely. But no, in any event, either way, Luthi gets taken out by de Bon. And
de Bon actually gets back up and then manages to crash again.
crash again. There's some rock throwing and yeah. But they there was a lot of, you know, rain type style crashes and stuff, but the gap was huge. It was, for a 250 race, it was like, wow, you know.
I think it was about 18 seconds. 17, yes. 18 seconds. So it was basically like Simoncelli did a Lorenzo without, you know, the tire management issues.
But yeah, Simoncelli had a masterful race and ended up finishing, you know, in the 250s, at least this year.
I don't remember the last time that a 250 race had that much of a lead.
That much of a gap. I know, it was insane because, you know, how as they cross the finish line, you get the leaderboard going on up there. And it's, okay, Simoncelli's in first.
Then they're
waiting and waiting and waiting. Oh, and Hector Fobel's in second. And it was just, you know, it was, wow, that's a huge gap.
It was great to see Locatelli finish on the podium.
Yeah. Good stuff.
They made a big deal out of the fact that two Gileras were on the podium for the first time in, like, you know, 20, 30 years, of course.
Has it been that long? Did they?
Some ridiculous amount of
years. I didn't
watch
the podium interviews. Yeah.
But, you know, which is silly because they're Aprias. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I know. That's true. But they're badged. Yeah. That's true. Well, and it's Simoncelli's first victory of the season because he hasn't exactly had the best season out of the gate, considering he's the, you know, 2008 250cc world champion.
Yeah.
Hasn't exactly been going all his way so far this year.
He's actually starting it very similar to last year, if you think about it.
Right.
You know, he was also that far behind in points. But, you know.
Do you think he's going to be able to pick it up? Is he going to be the 2009 champion?
Well, you know, it is early in the season, but, yeah. You know, he's 26
he's a
points
long ways
behind
back.
Bautista. Yeah. So, well, he was, you know, at one point he was 50 points behind, so.
Yeah, that's true. So, you know, you never know. And that's actually the fun thing about 250s. It's a lot more mixed up.
Yeah.
There's a lot more. Yeah, you really don't know who's going to win. It's a lot harder to make picks in the 250 class, which is why I don't bother. And speaking of picks, which we totally ignored our picks from last week, and that was the reason we had a disclaimer, if you'll recall, that that if it rains, all these go out the window because they did. What I went Rossi, Lorenzo's, and Stoner, and so I was way off.
Yeah.
But in any event, yeah, we're not even going to bother, but we will do the picks again for next week for Italy because that'll be a fun one.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's see, we're already hitting overtime as usual. Shocker. But we still have the World Super Dupers at Kyalami to talk about. And I think we should.
Yeah, we should talk about it.
Yes, it was some interesting stuff.
Yeah, let's start with Regis. So Regis Laconi, you know, had a massive crash in practice about the time that the show actually went online, I think. So I actually read it before I even noticed that the feed was updated. So we didn't know about it, obviously, when we were talking about it last Wednesday. But he had a massive crash and has been in a, you know, induced coma because he has two damaged vertebrae in his back. And but they're slowly bringing him out. He's had surgery. Has there been? I was looking for some news right before the call, and I haven't seen. Is he conscious yet?
I don't know.
I know they've been bringing him out, and that he's actually able to move all his limbs. Does that mean that they're communicating with him? It's very like the actual extent of the damage is not going to really be known for another couple of weeks. So you know, just wishing him all the best, obviously. But right. it does look a lot better than it did a couple of days ago, and it was just. There was no information, and he was in an induced coma. And those, you know, we've lost a lot of writers to that this kind of injury. So it looks like he's a very lucky guy, possibly. So you know, let's cross our fingers that the good news continues coming out of there.
Right. Because when I read the initial thing, which was after our last week call and everything, and my first thought was, I mean, Regis is not exactly the youngest guy on the grid.
No.
And it was a little bit like, you know, and it's not like, oh, the young guys can get hurt and the old guys shouldn't and stuff, but it's just, I don't know, you see a name that you've seen for so long, and all of a sudden it's like, wow, is this how he's going to end his career?
Yeah.
It takes a long
time to heal for the older guys, believe me.
Yeah,
I know.
It does. Yeah, exactly. I've never told you the story about my high school buddy that joined the Army at 42 years old. But yeah, exactly. He broke his tib fib fracture, 42 years old. These things are very, very serious once you get... out of your 20s, really, for any of these kind of things. And Regis is not, like I said, the youngest guy on the grid. And it was a little bit like, oh, that's not good.
Yeah. So we just wanted to just, you know, wish him the best. I don't know if he's going to be back to motorcycle racing, but, you know, obviously.
Yeah, maybe not. But let's hope he can, you know, that he... walks,
yeah, exactly,
and all of that, exactly. So yeah, we'll see with Regis, and of course we'll pass on whatever news we get and all of that, and you know, find out about Regis. As far as the racing was concerned, though, who was on pole again? What was that guy's name? Tip of my tongue. I just can't think. I can't believe this. He keeps qualifying on pole. Ben Spies.
He's not tied. Doug Poland's record of consecutive poles.
Exactly. Right. Next round will be a tiebreaker. And it's amazing. We had a different announcing team on the regular standard World Superbike feed. Jonathan Green is main play-by-play, but his color guy was Lance Isaacs. And I really enjoyed having Lance Isaacs the color guy.
I did not get to see that.
You didn't get to see it? No, you got to watch it. If nothing else, you know, he's from South Africa, so his accent
was
his South African accent is a bit sort of Dutch English sort of odd. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, and just some of his commentary and throwing things in, and it sounded a little bit like every now and then, you know, Jonathan Green didn't quite have the pattern, annoyed what to expect and stuff, so they're sort of thrown for a loop a little bit here and there, and it was an entertaining commentary, I think, in some ways, to say the very least, because Steve Martin was out there racing the BMW. Steve Martin is the test rider for BMW, and unfortunately they're having injuries as well. Yeah. So you know, so he's out there and racing. And so we got Lance Isaacs on the color commentary, and I thought just for the price of admission to watch the World Superbike official feed, that one was kind of entertaining.
Sweet.
But back to actually what happened on the grid. Spies qualified on pole again. It was
unbelievable.
It was. I mean,
everywhere
your first
he goes, He just figures things out, and you know, and he again he had a pretty close fight with Fabrizio again for the pole.
Yes, he did. Yeah. Speeds Fabrizio Biaggi Haga. What a front row! I mean, it's just amazing.
Yeah.
But the more amazing thing is Haga's launches this year. I mean, he's done very, very well.
It actually, you know, what's interesting is, and this is you'd expect the Ducati to be the best at the very low end, right? So the very beginning of the launch. Whereas his launches aren't the best because you always, the commentators are always like, oh, this guy got, like, Biaggi got a really good start, Spies got a great start, but then first corner, oh, there's Haga.
Yeah. You know? that's true. That's actually exactly what's happening. And I'm having to rewind the race and where the hell did he come from?
Yeah. And you look at him and you know, it's not like he's doing like a Pedrosa Stoner type of start where he's just no. The moment that it's a go, he's ahead.
Mm.
He just has a lot of mid range power, I guess, and gets that bike in there and just picks the perfect line for the first corner.
Yeah, he does. He's always on the inside. Good, it's getting good coming over. Yeah, exactly. And because it is a little weird. You're sort of mixed up and what's going on and all of that. I agree. That's a good way to put it because he doesn't necessarily launch right out of the gate.
Yep.
He tends to sort of turn one. Wow, there he is. And of these two, I mean, these were probably some of the lesser exciting superbike races that we've seen so far this season. Again, race one was the more exciting of the two that we getting kind of used to the past few rounds. One thing I noticed, which is this surface of Kyalami. It looked like crap.
Very, very bumpy.
Patches and tar snakes and bumps, and it was awful.
I think watching Fabrizio especially he probably runs a much stiffer setting than Haga because he looked really bouncy. He looked in control, but his head was bopping up and down like mad in some of the corners.
Out of shape a bit.
The location is incredible. I just have to say, like, that racetrack, the location with, you know, housing around there and, like, the views, it looks spectacular, you know, to be there. And, you know, obviously there was issues with the altitude for some of the bikes. I think that was the biggest problem for Spies in the first race was that he just didn't have the power that the... You know, those extra CCs that the Ducatis have really make a difference.
There's no replacement for displacement. You know, Spies is the guy that's carrying the flag of I can keep up with these guys, you know, as much as anybody. I mean, it's been a big mix-up. There's always a wide variety of, you know, you got Jonathan Reyes doing very well this year, mm-hmm. and all of that, but you know, Spies is the one guy that's going out there and showing, hey, I can mix it up with the Ducatis.
Yeah, well, they, you know, they have a very similar kind of power quality because of the way that the R1 crank is laid out. But when it comes to like being at this altitude, where every ounce of every cc, it really actually starts to make a difference because they're really like, you know, 15% to 25% less power at this altitude.
What is the? Do you recall what the altitude is up there?
It's like 5,000 feet. So Spies, you know, hung with those guys for quite a while in race one, and well, pretty much to the end. I mean, he was only 2 seconds behind at the end, but it was clear that down the straight he used to be able to draft past them. There was no way he could do it this time. There was a couple of times where he just had a better line out of the final corner, but in general, it was the Ducatis had the Ducati advantage.
Yeah.
Not to take anything from Nori, who is just, I mean,
he's on the perfect season, dude.
I don't remember who I was talking to. I mean, it may have actually been Liam I was talking to about. No, I don't think we talked about Kyalami, but somebody mentioned like, okay, who did they replace Haga with?
like, who's really in those leathers, you know?
oh, it's the Robo Haga or something. Yeah.
It's just not, you know.
He's quite different than he was last year.
The only times where you recognize that it's Haga is when somebody's ahead of him, and then he does that crazy, you know, I'll just follow you millimeters behind your wheel.
Yeah.
That is unmistakable. And every now
and then, and you'll also see the different lines, too.
Yes.
The Haga line.
That's true.
But you're right, though, that he's totally turned around from his previous seasons that we've always seen so far before of win it or bin it. I mean, there's really no better way to describe Haga as a win it or bin it.
Yeah.
And it might not be full on win, it might not be full on bin, but it's like, you know, I am either way up at the front or I suck. And, you know, for and he's not doing that this year. And that is what is so telling, you know, for him.
He really knows, especially with Spies pushing him the way he is. And
yeah.
and the luck that Haga has with regards to that, because,
well,
frankly,
we're going to get into that and talk about race two a little bit. But yeah exactly.
Let's go into it. Because really the results are not that interesting. So Haga won. Fabrizio second, Spies was third, Jonathan Ray
Max fourth, fifth. Oh, Biaggi, that was a battle.
Yeah,
the battle for fourth right there in race one was good stuff,
really good stuff.
And Haga, Fabrizio, Spies, Jonathan Ray, Max Biaggi, Carlos Checa in sixth, and we won't bother going down the entire order. But oh wait, Shinden Kano in seventh. You know, which is good. It's so many MotoGP names that are World Superbikes this year. I know it's like the old alumni association meeting. But yeah, race two though was a little different. Well, actually, it was quite a bit different. And have you seen what happened? Why did the bike, you know, fail?
Well, there was apparently an issue with the shit linkage.
Oh yes, it was. You're right. and I emailed you back. If they wouldn't make so much stuff out of shit, then they'd be fine. But basically, there was a press release came out from the Yamaha that said that Ben Spies had a problem with his shit linkage. And we got a good giggle out of that one, you know, but somebody else's typo. Do you think that's true, though, that was the problem? Or do you think they're covering something else up?
Well, I mean,
why
would
what
they cover up
think?
Something? I mean, it was...
Oh, come on. They cover stuff up all the time, Jules.
No, what would they cover up, I'm saying? Like,
I don't know.
I mean, it was a mechanical failure, obviously.
Yeah.
It wasn't Ben Spies going, you know, I don't feel like winning this race.
Yeah. I'm not feeling it.
Yeah.
Mom's not happy. She doesn't like South African food.
So it was some kind of a mechanical problem. It was very obvious very quickly. The fact that they were talking about the shifter is kind of interesting because where it happened, like, I would have expected him to be in a lower gear, possibly ready to shift up and going, oh crap, I can't shift. But but basically, yeah, he, you know, it was very immediate. He was leading the race.
Yeah.
You know.
Exactly. It was almost a little bit like the running out of gas issue. It's
just
but
it was so early. It was so early.
Yeah, exactly. Way earlier on in the race. But other than that, I mean, it was like that sudden.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And he knew immediately that he was toast. And it was the first time actually that we saw him realize this is actually costing him the championship at this point.
I think so.
You know, and his head was down, and it was a bummer to see.
It was a little bit of a bummer. I mean, we both of us are Haga fans,
right?
And not to knock Spies and all that. I mean, I want to see Spies do well, but Haga's got to win. Come on.
Well, at this point, it's looking pretty good at this point because he's, what, 68 points ahead of Spies, and actually, it's Fabrizio second.
Actually, after the end of the thing here, it's 85 points.
After the end of climbing.
But however, you still have eight more rounds of World Super Duper. So, come on. I mean,
16 races,
50 points a weekend, that's a lot. And we'll have to see how that works out. But yeah, Haga has, at this point, a commanding lead. And that it's, you know, as Haga fans, both of us are like, yeah. But on the other hand, it's not a deal at this point.
Yeah, and I would also really like to, you know, see
the actual it's funny. This is the opposite of what's going on in MotoGP. The racing is incredibly cool,
right?
In World Superbikes, very close racing, but the standings, aside from Fabrizio and Spies, who are now, you know, 3 points apart, they're pretty far apart, you know.
Right. It's a bit of a runaway in the standings, and you look at Hoggard's results, and every result is first or second except the one at Monza where he got no points because of the bird incident. Yeah. And that I think is telling in that, okay, we're 6 rounds into the season, 12 races into the season. Haga hasn't had any bizarre crashes or mechanical crashes. Nothing. The bird thing was, realistically, this stuff happens. Yeah. And what else are you going to do? You know, it's just, you know, they all just happen. But that was a big anomaly, because I think that had the bird not happened, again, it would have been a first or a second. In that race.
Yeah.
He's smoking hot. He's doing great. And Spies is I think confirming the fact, at least, that how much of it is, you know, so many of his points have come from wins.
Yeah.
And then he's had how many? Spies has had 3 no point scoring finishes. He's had a third, and he's had a second, and then he's had a 15th. So, you know, he's not showing the consistency that Haga has been showing.
Yeah.
Now, whether or not there's reasons for that and this and that, whatever, that doesn't matter at the end of the season, who has the most points. That's all that counts, whatever the reasons are.
Right.
And, so I'm still, you know, I'm waving the Haga flag, but it's been good stuff. And they're going to Miller next round, May 31st.
I'm still on the fence whether I'm going to make it out there or not. I really, really want to.
10 days away.
I know. No, it's going to be, if it's going to happen, it's going to be, you know, a midnight run type of thing. So
cool. I hope you get to go. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I really, really, really want to go. And there's a lot of great people going to be there. And it's just a matter of, you know, figuring out how to actually make it work. So
make it work, right? Including Susie Frisbee sent us an email talking about joining Sarah at her Miller, and it's like, you know, I'm sorry, there's no way it's happening this year. It's the worldwide economic, you know, meltdown has affected me, and I do not have the money to even consider something as fun as that. Unfortunately, that'd be great, dude. I mean, it would really be good stuff.
I'm trying to find out who's driving out there so I can, like, you know, pitch in some gas money.
Yeah, there you go. Well, we've still got a week for that kind of thing. So if you're listening to the show and you're driving from the Bay Area-ish, and you want to give Jules a ride, give us a call.
A lot of space. I just need a space. Yeah. You know, I just need room for one big lens, and that's it.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty much a tank bag is all Jules needs.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay, so there you go, folks. If you're listening out there and you're going to Miller and you're from the Bay Area and you want to give Jules a ride, give him a call.
Or you're passing through or on your way or whatever.
Exactly. You know, that general area. And, I kind of wish I was going. I'd love to go to a race at Miller. It's a beautiful facility. My only issues with it is that it's effectively in the middle of nowhere, and not a little nowhere, a big nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, your closest city is Salt Lake. Oh, yeah, baby. Let's go to Salt Lake City and party.
Here come the emails of Salt Lake City.
I'm sorry. If there are emails from Salt Lake City, you know what I'm talking about. And frankly, you guys deserve it.
Well done.
Brutal. When's the last time you saw some fantastic restaurant that was in Salt Lake City? I'm sure there are. That was a mean comment, so I'll take that one back. But
I've never been to Salt Lake City. Well, neither have I. Maybe I have been when I was a kid.
I've stopped there on the airport, and it's a beautiful. It's like a clear city. There's no smog. You pull in the airplane, and you know, it looks like, wow, look at this little city in the middle of nothing. And but on the other hand, Tooele is farther out in the middle of nothing. And, you know, I don't know. But Miller is a beautiful facility.
Yeah, but there's no facility. World Superbike around there, so, you know.
Exactly. It's a beautiful facility, and the track is great. It's got a lot of different variations of setup. It would be really cool to see AMAs and World Superbikes out there this year again, but it's apparently not happening. So, you know, what can you say? It'll be a good round for those folks that out there that would like, you know, going out in the boonies and camping.
Yeah.
So, there we go. That'll get the Salt Lake comments coming in.
Well done.
Yes, I have my moments. So, all right. I mean, you want to go down the championship standings a little bit? We kind of covered it already. 85-point gap back to Fabrizio. Which actually, that's kind of cool too, in and of itself. That Fabrizio's having quite a season. I mean, he's won one. He's picked up 4 second places. I mean, Fabrizio is starting to show himself as a solid teammate.
Yeah, he's a solid teammate, and well, although he's not really riding like a teammate who's his teammate to win.
I mean, that second race, I gotta say that
he was taking some serious chances for both of them. On that last lap, two corners where he, you know, they had such different lines where it was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Just let him finish.
Let him finish. And had they shown the pits more, you know, if you'd seen the pits on camera more, there must have been a lot of, you know,
grimaces
clenching.
And like,
oh, yeah. Oh God, no, don't let it
don't
happen.
Do it.
Yeah. Take both riders
Remember Hayden Pedrosa, everyone.
Yes. You know? But the thing is, though, is as fans, that's what I want to see.
Oh,
come on,
yeah.
I want to see, you know, I don't want to see this guy saying, oh, well, yeah, he's the lead guy. I'll let him win. You know, I want to see.
In my notes for that race, I actually have, like, it was fairly boring except for the last lap, which was really outstanding.
It was. Yeah. Fabrizio was going – he was going hell for leather on that lap.
Oh, yeah.
Race two, last lap. Late break into, what, the last three corners?
Pretty much.
Just insanity of, like, you know, throwing it out there.
Yeah.
I will try to win.
Yep.
And it was a very, very cool thing to see. And actually, the Miller layout may or may not support that sort of strategy. But I think that overall it'll still be good stuff. I'm interested to see how Fabrizio does at Miller, you know, compared to Haga and all of that. It's going to be good stuff.
Yep.
And, of course, Spies. Again, the altitude is going to be a factor. If, you know, if it's a factor in Johannesburg, it's going to be a factor in Salt Lake City. But how much so, you know, will they have learned anything? Et cetera, et cetera. Those things are going to be factors as well.
And let's remember that, you know, this is a track that he's been at.
Exactly. On the other hand, it's not like, you know, Haga has also been there. So it's not
I'm just saying that, but, you know, I mean, Speed's
got
amazing
right.
at tracks he's never been to.
Yeah.
What's it going to be like when he's at a track that he knows very well? So.
Yeah, that's actually a very good point. What have you seen? What layout they're running? Any details on any of that kind of business?
Oh, you know, I didn't look. Yeah, that's right, because they have lots of options over there.
Right. Because last year AMA and World Supers ran a different layout at Miller because it is a huge facility and it's very well laid out, very well designed, and they can do all sorts of different fun things with the course that the riders are, you know, the layout that the riders are running. And
So we should look into that before the next show, so we can
that would be preparation and stuff.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, you're right. We will do that. I, as a hunch off the top of my head, I'd say they're probably running the same layout they ran last year.
Because it worked.
But yes, because it worked, and it's a bit of a hunch. Mm-hmm. But we should check that out.
Cool.
Well, all right. I think you got. Anything else major going on or
nope.
Want to call it good at about an hour and actually hour 15 minutes, relatively short call today. So we will talk to you again, Jules, next week after what do we got coming up this week?
Nada.
How does that work? How can we have these world-class series and we've got Memorial Day here in the United States weekend and nothing? Because, yeah, I was going over to my head and I couldn't remember anything. And it's like, we got nothing. Yeah.
I'm on a bunch of rides, so let's hope I'm not going to crash.
Yes, don't crash. You still have the Duck Toddy. The
Duck Toddy, yep.
Yes, the Ducati. And but yes, do not crash. Go out on your bunch of rides. Have a good time. I'll probably go on a ride. I'm going to have some fun. Take my nice 3-day weekend. It's Memorial Day, et cetera, et cetera. But unfortunately, no motorcycle racing. And I don't have the Formula One schedule right here in front of me because it's not like I follow it that closely. So I don't know. And AMA, I've pretty much given up on. So,
well, you know, we had AMA here at Infineon Sears last Point. Weekend.
Yeah,
which is you know 40 minutes from where I live, so it's kind of ridiculous that I didn't go, but I didn't go because I'm not supporting the series. I'm not supporting what happened, and I'm just not that interested anymore.
I'm in the same boat. I mean, I could have, you know, Infineon for me is still it's a long drive, but I Sears Point, not Infineon. I would go down there for it's a cool track to watch a race from. Because the NASCAR money has come in, and they've made the track easy to watch a motorcycle race from with the terraces and all that business.
Yep.
But it's like, yeah, it's like I can't see taking the time off work and the money for the drive and worrying about, you know, camping or staying in a motel or whatever. It's not worth it.
You're staying with us if you come down.
I would definitely stay with you. But even
yeah,
you know,
coming
just
down. The, yeah, no, I mean, it is, yeah. For me, it was like, you know, it wasn't as much of a money issue. It was much more of a time issue. I was like, okay, and I also was in a lot of pain.
but still, relatively speaking, it's a little bit sad that you're not going to go to a motorcycle race in your backyard. Because it's such a mess.
Yeah, and it was funny because I talked to a bunch of people who were like who didn't go, and they were and I was it was like why didn't you go? Same thing. It was everybody just don't want to put, you know, effort into getting out there and giving the money to these guys, and this is actually getting pretty ugly.
It is, and it's sad. It's sad, and I mean, Allie, huge fan. She said this is the first time she's not gone to Sears Point in how many years?
Like 12 years or something like that.
Yeah, it's something crazy. And she, you know, she's a huge motorcycle fan. Big fan of MotoGP OD, by the way. Runs the Facebook group and all of that business. And not going to the AMA out there. And I don't blame her. It's like, you know, it's sad. I hate to say it, but it's a little bit like, why bother?
Yeah.
So. Well, all right. I think we've blathered on enough for this call. So, good stuff. And we will have another show in a couple of weeks with a race preview. And until then, we'll figure something out for next week. And we'll talk to you soon, right, Jules?
All right. Have a good one. Ciao.
There you go. Like I said, long call with Jules. Hope you enjoyed it. Some good stuff. Real quick, I do want to give you an update on Regis Laconi's condition. This is off the MotoGP Matters blog, is where I happen to read this story. That's David Emmett's website there, Kropotkin Thinks, and it's excellent stuff. So make sure you check that out, MotoGPMatters.com. And this particular little item is Regis Laconi. Operation successful, but there's worries about his left leg. Regis Laconi's condition continues to improve since his horrific crash at Kyalami's mineshaft turn on the very first lap out of the pits. Laconi has been in the Johannesburg Sunning Hill Hospital, where he's been kept under the watchful eye of the medical specialist there, et cetera, et cetera. He was kept in a medically induced coma for quite some time. They did an operation, put a plate into his neck to stabilize fractured vertebrae there, brought him out of his this medically induced coma. Apparently, Regis was already sort of cracking jokes and things like that. So that's a good sign. However, right now his left leg apparently is some paralysis is going on, and it's not sure whether this is permanent or temporary condition, and only time is going to tell. So of course we wish Regis the absolute best of luck. He's going to be staying there in South Africa for a little bit longer, and then he'll return to Paris to continue his rehabilitation. And you know, hopefully that goes well. We want to see you back out there on the track as soon as possible. Regis has been a great road racer for many, many years, and we don't want to see him going out this way. So like I said, heal up, get back out there, get some more racing done. And other than that, I think we're about done for this week. Make sure you tune in next week. We're going to be doing a Catalunya free race show, and it'll be good, good stuff. Looking forward to that. Actually, we're not going to do a Catalunya show yet because our next race is Italy. So we'll be doing a Mugello free race show before we do the Catalunya show. But Jules and I will talk about that next week. And we've got some other stuff planned, some really, really good stuff coming up. So until next week, keep the shiny side up, Riverside down, and we'll talk to you again later. MotoGPOD is produced by Bob Hayes, and I'm solely responsible for its content. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners, and MotoGPOD is not affiliated with any of them.